session number 27185, reel 14.
Major Barras, reel 14.
Perhaps if I may, just the word battle drill has only just occurred to me, actually, after all these years. But that's what, in fact, we were taught at the battle school, was to ensure that when we came across the enemy, some instant action was taken, and we weren't sort of paralyzed like frightened rabbits, I think was the word that was used in those days.
Was that the first time you'd heard the expression battle drill?
Yes, I think it was. I think it was thought of and developed. Well, I won't say it was originally thought of, but it certainly resuscitated itself and was developed at these battle schools. And as I said before, every division had one. So that pretty well every infantry officer should have been through one at some stage or other.
Now, you said that you went, and what was it, you plus other officers, or was it you and other ranks who went through the course?
No, we were all officers at the time, yeah. Yeah, at that time. Now, they ran courses for NCOs. I don't think they ran them for private soldiers. They ran them for sergeants, platoon sergeants. They may have got down to corporals as section commanders. I imagine they should have done if they didn't. But then, of course, there were a lot of us. So it was a question of time and numbers, really, fitting them all in.
How many of you were there at the school when you went and did the course?
I just can't remember. I really can't remember, I'm afraid.
Did they go above platoon level when they were practicing these tactical battle drills and schemes?
Oh, yes, I think so. It was down-to-earth business.
Mm.
Yeah.
But did they go up to company level?
No, I don't think so. I think it was all right down to platoon.
Platoon?
Yeah, yeah. It was all right up front.
Who was actually doing the instruction? What sort of people have they got telling you?
Well, there were officers from the division who had obviously been through a course themselves, but there's a chicken and egg business here, isn't there? I mean, who started it? But somewhere there, those who started it or thought of it and developed it must have chosen some officers to start it off, who themselves, having been relieved by somebody who'd been on the course, went through the course themselves, so that everybody went through. So presumably there was a stage at the very beginning when it was instructed by people who hadn't been through the course, but as time went by, I'm sure they all had been. They were running around shouting and throwing thunder flashes at us.
Do you know if these were all men who'd actually been in battle as such?
No, I don't think they had. Some of them may have been. I know they got the idea as to what they had to do, and they just did it. I don't think you needed to know to have been in war. It probably helped your reputation if you'd been done it.
Did the course there develop progressively? In other words, did it get harder as you went on through it?
Oh, I think it must have done. I'm sure they treated us more gently than they did at the end. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
What were the main emphases on then in this training? Was it getting over obstacles, or was it getting you accustomed to fire, or was it practicing the tactics of fire and movement?
Well, it was both, I think. It was certainly to get us used to fire and movement, to get the idea into our minds, instant action when they came across the enemy, and to give people some ideas to what the battlefield was like. It was all a sort of wake-up call, really, you know, to get people alive and aware. Because we hadn't had, apart from battles that have been going on in the desert and that sort of thing, very few people had experienced any form of warfare which required people to attack and go forward.
Did they try in any way to replicate or represent enemy tactics?
No, I don't think so. No. I mean, the thing was, you came up against the enemy, you were being fired at. I don't think there was any effort to try and sort of produce what the enemy might have done or might not have done. You were against an enemy who was already entrenched.
Were you using live ammunition during these training sessions?
I'm sure we were, yes. Yes, I'm sure we were. We had these 303 rifles, good old rifle. We must have had targets to shoot at times. Yeah.
Did all the officers in the battalion go through this by stages?
Well, certainly all the infantry company officers went through it. Whether the whether headquarter company and signals officers and people like that had to go through it, I don't know. As I mentioned before, it was really a question of priority and a question of vacancies on the course and how many people they could take at a time and how many courses they could run. Because they're doing the whole division here, you see.
Was it the case then that the trainees on the course you were on were from all the way across the division?
Yes, we have people from all over the division on the course, yeah. Whether in fact they took them from a course contained only the brigade or whether they were all across the division, I don't know. It's possible they may have said to a brigade, right, this is your course, you've got 20 vacancies, you nominate, and that was it. On the other hand, they may have given smaller nominations to each brigade across the division. I can't remember. I do know there were a lot of officers there from other units, yeah.
Were you expected to pass on this new knowledge and wisdom when you got back to the company? Was it supposed to influence the way in which you were doing your own training program?
Oh, definitely, yes. I mean, battle drill was the thing in those days and had to be introduced right the way down the line. So I had to go back and teach this to my company.
How did they take to it, ideas?
As far as I can remember, I think they probably jumped at it. Gave them something to latch onto. I can't remember any more than that, really.
What happened next?
Well, after that, I got a letter in October sometime which said I'd gone to an infantry company commander's course now. So,
having commanded a company for some time.
Well, this was October.
Yes.
The first intimation I got here that I was a company commander was in August.
Yes.
So not too bad, really. Mm-hmm. You didn't have a chance of doing things in the order in which you would like to do it. You know, say, right, you're going to command a company in 3 months' time, therefore you'll go on a course now. It didn't happen like that. I mean, the vacancies just appeared overnight and you were drafted straight in. So when the first, I presume this was the first opportunity they could get a vacancy for me, to go on Southeastern Command Infantry Company Commander's course. And this was held at Lavington House, Petworth in Sussex. Now, I think this was a four-week course. Which covered pretty well everything a company commander should know, from administration to tactics to giving out orders and so forth.
Now, your battle school course had been physical and it had been outdoor, hadn't it?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Doing the tactical business on the ground. What about this company commander's course? Was it a course which relied more upon classroom instruction and theory, or was it a course that put you out on the ground and confronted you with decisions to take?
Oh, yeah. It was a mixture. Obviously, we started off with lectures. A lot of them to do with things we hadn't known before about organisations of the army, a division, supporting arms, their use in battle. And having got this under our belts, how to give out orders, and as I said, administration of a company, we then went out on the ground and did TEUTs, tactical exercise for light troops, where you were given situations and you had to make up your orders and then give them out to the rest of the... We were in syndicates, and we had an instructor, and he would give us the information we needed about the enemy and our own troops, what we had, what the enemy had, and so forth. And then he'd give us a situation that the company was to do an attack, say. And then he, as a battalion commander, he would give the orders out to the syndicate as a battalion commander. The syndicate, each individual, then had to make up their own orders for the company attack, or whatever phase of battle it was. And then one or two of them would be called upon to give them out to the rest of the syndicate. After that, there would be criticism all round, and then the syndicate head, who was lieutenant colonels, I think they were, or majors. They were lieutenant colonels, temporary lieutenant colonels, I think, would sum up and summarize the lessons learned. And then we all went home. There were sand tables as well, I remember, inside, which we used as for exercises.
What scale would those be, the sand table?
Oh, I can't remember, but I'm probably the size of this table.
But I'm thinking in terms of the scale of...
Oh, you mean to... On the,
yes.
I wouldn't know.
I mean,
they were quite realistic.
Yes. It seems that when you went out on the ground, you were really looking at commanding a company in a battalion context.
Right.
But on a sand table, you can represent a divisional or bigger.
Well, no, a sand table was much more local than that.
Oh, was it?
It was local enough for a company or battalion operations, yeah. Very often we were given the background of a divisional operation, so that we got some idea as to how we fitted into the overall picture.
What sort of ground were you exercising over? What was the terrain like around?
Well, it was mixed, I think, as far as some of it was open, some of it was wooded. We did actual physical exercises as well. We used to do patrolling at night. The syndicates were split into a couple or two or three into patrols and given a task at night to go and find out whether the enemy were in a certain position. And then they'd already planted someone there to make a noise or so that they could, some special noise, so they could tell whether you'd been there or not. There was also map reading, which we used to have to do, where you followed a certain route. You were given a route to follow across the countryside, and you took your map, and you were had to use compass bearings to get you on your route. And I remember we did it at night too, and there was a bottle of port. I remember put it to finishing tape for the patrol that got back first. It was all good fun, and I think it was very beneficial. It was a very good course, I remember.
Did it follow on naturally from the battle school course? What were the sort of tactics you were learning at company commander's course?
Well, I suppose it was, yes, because we were superimposed on it. Yes, I think it was useful. In fact, it was a useful way to do it, to do the battle school first and to do the company commander's course afterwards, yeah.
You mentioned going out at night on patrol on the company commander's course. Had you done night attacks during battle school? Was that part of the training there?
I can't remember. I'd be surprised if we hadn't, but I wouldn't like to say yes, we did. There was a lot of emphasis put on night work at this stage. I remember there was some, I don't know whether it was now or whether it came in later, but somebody higher up in the echelon thought it'd be a good idea if we all slept during the day and worked at night, which meant that we had you had lunch at midnight. People working in their offices with the lights on and blackout. I thought it was a screwy idea actually in the end, because if you really wanted, the people who really wanted to operate at night could go out on exercises and operate at night. You didn't have to have everybody, the whole sort of battalion, sleeping during the day and working at night. In war, in the battle situation where you were probably up half the night, you just took your kit when you could, and when you when you needed it, you knew you needed it, and you just went off. So I think this is a rather silly idea. We did it once or twice. It wasn't a battalion idea. It came from above somewhere. And then it faded out.
On the company commander's course, were all the students on it infantry?
Yes, it was an infantry commander's course. I'm sure they were, yes.
And they came from all the way across the command, presumably?
Yes, they would. It was the Southeastern Command course, that's right, yeah.
When you were giving out orders on this, did you give out orders in written form or normally in verbal form?
Well, you spoke them, obviously, but you wrote your orders out to make sure you got them right, because you were then talking of artillery, tanks, support, artillery support and times of artillery.
So you're really learning combined arms tactics
at
any level at this stage?
Definitely, yes, definitely. I can remember we had an FOO who was put there who we could talk to from the artillery, that is, yeah.
So, and had there been any notion of a battle school of combined arms or all arms tactics coming in?
No, it was purely, purely the raw stuff on the ground.
Did you have to submit written work for assessment or correction? Did you have to do map studies, for example, or write reconnaissance reports?
Well, I complained bitterly in my letter, I remember, that we stayed in and did a lot of writing over the weekends. So we were obviously given situations in writing and told to go away and write it up. I mean, it could be what was called an appreciation of the situation, which led up to your plan. In other words, you had to sit down and write out everything you knew from the enemy's dispositions to your own dispositions, the enemy's capability, your own capability, what you had in reserve or support, what the enemy had in reserve and support, the ground situation, the air situation. You had to write all this down and then come to some conclusion at the end as to what your plan would be. Then you got down and wrote your plan out. And if you were required to give orders, then you wrote your orders out. And of course there was, as I'm sure there is now, there was definite headings under which you gave your orders. Your objective was the first heading, I remember. You had to state very clearly what your objective was. Then you said what the enemy had, was the enemy situation, your own situation. Then you wrote your operational orders as to what everybody was going to do. Then after that came the supporting arms as to what support you were going to get from the artillery or tanks or the Royal Engineers when it comes to mines and booby traps or that sort of thing. And then finished up with administration about when you were going to have meals and who was going to do what. And then at the end of it, underneath, you signed it off and then you had a distribution as to who was going to get it.
On balance, in these studies, what's the emphasis on the tactical side or on the administrative side?
Oh, tactical, definitely, yeah. Yeah.
So tactics was the most important thing.
Tactics, organisation, because if you didn't know your organisation, you couldn't do your tactics. I mean, we learnt a lot about the organisation of a division and the army as a whole on this course.
Were these schemes integrated in that you mentioned having to do a theoretical appreciation, presumably from map and dummy briefings? Would that then lead into actually going onto the ground and analysing the terrain from direct view and then giving verbal orders?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm sure.
So it would follow through
from, yes,
from
yes.
theory down to practice on a tute basis?
Yes, yes. Oh, yes, quite definitely. Mm. It was a logical process. We weren't just shoved into something without having got the proper preparation beforehand, that I do remember. It was a very good course. I can still remember bits of it quite clearly. The instructor, I mean, we had a Canadian, one of the Canadians there. One of the instructors was a Canadian, I remember.
And that lasted 4 weeks.
Yeah, that lasted 4 weeks. Now, the next letter, that was October, so that took us really into November. And the next letter was dated the 8th of December, or my father got what I had, which was, the address came from Five Corps School. Now, Five Corps School was a junior officer's tactical school. And I'd been sent there for a few days for them to assess whether I was going to be any good as an instructor and me to assess whether I wanted to do the job.
How did they assess you? Do you know what they were looking for when they were deciding whether or not they wanted you?
I suppose they I suppose a bit of leadership, a knowledge of your job, handling other officers, because they were all officers on this course, relationships amongst people, whether you were going to be acceptable amongst the other instructors, or whether you were going to stir things up or be a meanie or something. But I suppose they looked at me over the few days I was there.
Would you care to share a mess with this man?
Yes, that's right, yes. Or, who was it? Groucho Marx said he wouldn't join a club, but had him as a member, yes. Anyway, I spent a few days there. The thing that struck me when I got in there was that, of course, this was Five Corps School, which had been set up by Monty when he was GOC Five Corps. And his influence was there all over the place. First thing that you saw when you went in through the front door. This was in the Camford Cliffs Hotel just outside Bournemouth on the coast there. They'd taken the hotel over and was using it as the school, for the school. And the first thing you saw when you went in was a great banner in the hall saying, "Have you got binge?" Which was Monty's favourite word at that time. Binge, you know, sort of, up, are you alive and up and yearning to get at the enemy? And then I noticed on the notice board on the wall there was a notice saying infantry is the queen of the battlefield. Now I can quite see what Monty was getting at. He was trying to get rid of the old PBI image, poor British infantry of the First World War, and which to some extent really sort of cast its shadow over the BEF, I suppose, in some ways, although it was a different situation. But he was obviously trying to get us out of that mental sort of thinking, not just the infantry but other people as well. Because after all, in a modern battle, the infantry commander is the person who coordinates things on the battlefield. He's the bloke who gives the orders out. He's the chap who has the artillery in support, the tanks in support or under command or whatever. And at the end of the day, he's the man who has to give the orders and do the job. And it's the infantry who takes the position in the end, however well they're or not well supported by other arms. So I remember those when I first went there. Now, I was only there a few days. And then I returned to the battalion, which was now in Fort Whidley, which, as you probably know, is behind Portsmouth on the hill there. Oh, Napoleonic War edifice. But I believe we only had part of the battalion stationed in there. There was a joke going around at that time that the quartermaster stores were in Havant, just down the road, but I can't remember where they were actually there. One thing I do remember about being stationed there was the place of simply crawling in wrens, which gave us the opportunity of finding a little bit of exercise, a little bit of recreation on the outside the barracks, which we hadn't had, I don't think, before.
Were there any difficulties between soldiers and sailors? Portsmouth would have been full.
Oh, no, I don't remember. I don't remember any at all. The thing about it was that as officers, we weren't allowed to consort with the ATS privates or uncommissioned. But when it came to the other arms, like the Wrens and the WAF, there was no problem. So I mean, it's quite understandable, really. I suppose if you've got ATS of in the mess was serving, and if you've just had a tiff with her the night before, and you're sitting down there waiting for your egg and bacon, and you get hot tea poured over your head, it was bad for discipline anyway. It didn't work. But there was no objection to going up at Wren's, and we used to have big parties with them in the local pubs. I can remember on one occasion I got mixed up with some submariners in their famous drinking hall there called the Dolphin Hotel, I think it was. And I spent the night in HMS Dolphin, where their barracks in Portsmouth. And I remember waking up the next day and going in, they took me into breakfast in this great big hall. It was a pre-war barracks, of course. And you picked up a paper, and you picked up a big sort of wooden rack, which you took with you to the table, and you set this big rack up in front of you and put the paper on the rack. So you had no communications with anybody around you, which was a very good idea for breakfast. A lot of people, their senior officers and so forth, and they were all sort of happily munching away their toast behind the Times.
The tradition of the silent breakfast.
Well, that's right, silent service, yes.
But does this mean that you didn't stay at the 5-4 tactical school?
Yes, I went back there.
Oh, you went back?
So yes, as an instructor.
So you just went there initially for this selection process.
I went there, yes, that's right.
And so it sounds like what you're saying is that you were acceptable to them and you were attracted by the idea of teaching there.
Well, yes, it gave me a break from normal regimental soldiering, which at that time was just the same sort of things going on all the time, although from my letters I seem to be enjoying it. It is something which I thought might be fun and a change.
What was on the syllabus at this core tactical school? How did it differ from what you've learned on the captain's course, company commander's course?
Well, it was further down the line. It was platoon commanders here. I might say I was there for six. It was a 6 month,
yes,
fixed appointment. The course itself was to deal they were all platoon commanders we got from all over the corps, actually. And the course was tactical. It's the same as we did at the company commander's course, only on a lower level. We did exactly the same things. We had a syndicate. I had a syndicate. The Camford Cliffs Hotel was ideal because all the bedrooms we could use as syndicate rooms. We had a central. The ballroom was used as a sort of one for central assembly and lectures for everybody. And I remember there was a sand table in there as well, or put down at some stage, which was used. And then the toots and the patrolling and exercises we did were done on behind Bournemouth on Camford. There's a big open space, moor-like country there, where we did all the exercises.
Were the people you were teaching already established platoon commanders, or were they candidates for platoon commanding?
No, they were all platoon commanders. They all came from battalions within the corps. And they wouldn't have been doing anything else in a battalion other than having a platoon, I don't think.
How long did the course last?
I think it was three weeks. I can't honestly remember exactly. It was about 3 weeks, I think.
Do you remember what was on the syllabus of instruction?
Well, I think, as I mentioned before, as a company commander's course, it was the same. We started off by giving them organisation, lectures on organisation of battalion, brigade and division, so they got an idea as to what they were in, so to speak. I'm sure they will have had lectures on support in the way of artillery and tanks,